Blog Talk Radio.
Well, this is Jason Hawes on American Faith Today, but unfortunately, as I have no intro music and as I got a message that Blog Talk Radio, something is up with their system, and I have a bad feeling that I'm actually even not going out, not recording, but I have no idea whatsoever. And unfortunately, there's no way for me to even know whether or not what I'm saying right now, what I'm putting out over the air, so to speak, is actually being heard or will be heard. Tried to come on at 4:30, and when I made my call into the network, they had a message saying that they were having a problem with their system, but then it kind of allowed me to continue on, and the same thing, no intro music, and so I just ended the show at that point. I rewrote the show and went live with it, and it's the same type of thing. They're saying there's a problem with their system. It wound up counting me down and giving me the little Blog Talk Radio jingle, if you will, and then nothing, no intro music, no anything. I see that I have a clock that's counting me down, but I have a bad feeling nothing is being recorded. And like I said, I have no idea, unfortunately, whether it is or whether it isn't. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to do a show as if nothing is wrong, even though I'm pretty sure that it is, and we'll see what happens. Right now, well, actually, I guess maybe I can get a chat room up and going here, but right now I am totally in the dark, unfortunately. As to whether or not this is actually recording anything. But anyway, we'll give it a go, and we'll see whether or not it actually works. I wanted to talk today about something that happened, and I'm sorry if I sound a little bit, I'm going to try not to sound shaken, presuming this is actually recording anything or going out live anywhere. But obviously it was an unexpected difficulty that I've encountered here. So I'm not as smooth as I want to be here in the early going. So you'll have to bear with me on that. If, like I said, this is actually even going out, if it's actually even recording. If you are out there listening live, and I mean, if you can actually hear my voice, and if you're out there listening live, if you want to sign into the chat room, you don't have to say anything. You don't have to announce yourself in any other way whatsoever. But if you're listening to me live right now and you want to sign into the chat room to say, yes, I can hear you, that would be great. If you're not, then that either means that you'll be listening on the archives or you'll be listening a bit later on, even as I'm going live here, hopefully. Or nothing is being heard, which, again, is my fear. But anyway, what I wanted to get into today, and I'll either get into it later today or I'll try to find a time to get into it tomorrow, which should be easily doable. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Donald Trump, and I wanted to talk a little bit about, is this guy, and I know it's a little bit late in the process, I know it's a little bit late in the game to be doing this, but we had, you know, I wanted to talk about, is this guy truly anti-establishment, or, you know, an outsider versus an insider, or even a conservative? And like I said, it is late in the game. Most people around the country have at least voted in the primary, in their state's primary. And most of us obviously have already made up our mind one way or another whether Donald Trump is the next great president of the United States or whether he's, in his own choice of words, a total and complete loser. But we did have something very interesting, and very eye-opening. And as I said in the write-up, something that I think shows a clear, absolute, a line in the sand, people taking one side, lining up with one group, establishment, non-establishment, conservative, liberal, populist, moderate, whatever. But people have definitely placed themselves, and again, most of them were already there. In fact, practically all of them, in my opinion, were already there. But certainly people have definitely placed themselves in one camp, firmly in one camp or another, with what came out with John Boehner. Now, my totally useless former representative, and, it's one thing to be a useless representative in Congress, because there's 435 or so members of the House of Representatives in Congress. If you're one useless individual in the House, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you can still kind of hide amongst 434 other people, even though you're going to have quite a few other useless ones there with you, and some good ones as well. But if you're a useless congressman, congressperson in the House of Representatives, to a lesser extent, even in the Senate, that's one thing. You can still kind of hide, unless, of course, you're a useless representative. Again, as far as I'm concerned, you're my useless representative or former useless representative. But when you're the Speaker of the House of Representatives, or, again, the former Speaker, and you're totally useless, that's even worse, and there's not really any place where you can hide at that point. But anyway, John Boehner, of course, left that gig, thank the good Lord, left that job, left that position last year, around about October, end of October, I believe it was, if memory serves, at the end of October, so right around Halloween. But he left, he retired, he vacated his congressional seat. He vacated the speakership of the House, which, of course, went to Paul Ryan. And, I don't know if it's that John Boehner felt the need to go and get some attention for himself, or I'm sure he was asked to do this interview, but John Boehner goes out to Stanford University, out there in wacko liberal academia, but also wacko liberal California. He goes out to Stanford University and he does an interview with the student newspaper out there at Stanford. And during that interview, of course, he's asked about the candidates, specifically on the Republican side of the aisle, the remaining three candidates for president. And, he talks a little bit about John Kasich and says that he's friends with Kasich, says it's basically a challenging friendship, or John Kasich apparently requires a little bit more effort on John Boehner's part to be friends. But he says he loves John Kasich, he supports John Kasich, blah, blah, blah. He then goes on to talk about, and I don't know if this is the order that he talked about these people, but he mentions that Donald Trump is actually a golfing partner and a texting buddy. And then he goes on and he's asked about Ted Cruz, apparently scrunches up his face or makes a somewhat comical face and refers to Ted Cruz, Senator Cruz, as Lucifer in the flesh and the most miserable SOB that he's ever worked with. And, of course, the media has had, to a certain extent, had an absolute field day with this. And I'll just go with this story right now, this first story concerning these comments, before I get into a little bit deeper commentary and so forth. This from newsbusters.org, and it's an article written, a piece written by Kyle Drennan over there, titled "Network Sees on Boehner's Nasty Slam to Bury Cruz." Drenner writes, "All three network morning shows on Friday reveled in John Boehner's vicious attack on Ted Cruz, hyping the former House Speaker, labeling the Texas Senator, again, Lucifer in the flesh. The NBC, CBS, and ABC broadcasters portrayed the comment as another, quote, challenge that, again, quote, unquote, really hurts Cruz's campaign. On NBC's Today, correspondent Peter Alexander happily punned his way through a report. For Ted Cruz, counting on a comeback, the devil's in the details, with former Speaker of the House John Boehner at a private event giving Cruz hell. A soundbite followed of Boehner ranting, "Lucifer in the flesh. I have never worked with a more miserable son of a B, asterisk, 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 you know what he said, in my life. Over my dead body would he be president." After noting Cruz's response to Boehner, which Cruz, by the way, basically said, "Look, I don't know the guy. You know, the guy's calling me a miserable SOB, the most miserable SOB that he's ever worked with. I've never worked with him, period. If I've said 50 words to the man in my lifetime, that's pretty much the maximum." And, of course, the media, even then, at the prodding, apparently, of John Boehner, Boehner said, "Well, wait a minute, he knows me, he was my lawyer." Well, no, he wasn't. Boehner, years ago, in 1996, or whenever it was, apparently an elderly couple driving through Florida or somewhere, somehow, I don't even know how, but somehow they intercepted a conversation that may have been between Boehner and Newt Gingrich. It was between Boehner and another Republican representative. And they turned that conversation over to one of the Democratic leaders in the House. And Boehner sued. And in suing this elderly couple and whomever he decided to sue in this thing, he retained the legal services of basically Ted Cruz's boss. Mike Carvin was the guy's name. I think this might be the same guy who went on to become I may be mixing things up. I want to say it might be the same guy who went on to become a judge. I want to say the same guy that Cruz has said he would nominate for a Supreme Court position, or would have nominated for a Supreme Court position instead of John Roberts. But anyway, he retained the services basically of Ted Cruz's boss of that particular firm or partnership. Cruz was basically just out of law school at Harvard. He was a very wet-behind-the-ears young attorney. He was assigned to work on some legal briefs on the case, but perhaps never even saw John Boehner, let alone spoke to him. But anyway, so he was never really Boehner's lawyer. And he said, "Look, I don't know the guy." And he said, also pointed out that basically Boehner, in attacking me, he's attacking conservatives, and in essence, he's attacking you. Because that's what I've been trying to do is, work for you. Keep my promises to you, the people who elected me, which, of course, for him would be the people in the state of Texas. But anyway, Alexander, after noting Cruz's response to Boehner, touted how the upcoming Indiana primary was, quote, do or die for the senator. You see how they're framing this, by the way, by how the mainstream media is framing this against Ted Cruz? And believe me, I'll get to Trump here. But he doesn't have a chance. This is proof. Nobody likes him. Why is he even still campaigning? Why is he out there with Carly Fiorina now? They're not going to do anything. They need to drop out. And even Fox News is saying this, by the way. But anyway, Alexander is saying that Indiana primary do or die for the senator and declared, "Trump's team is feeling very much alive, collecting new congressional endorsements and reading Cruz his last rites." Now, again, is it me or does it sound like that they're actually pushing for Donald Trump here? A quip followed of Trump campaign aide Paul Manafort sneering, "Last Tuesday was the nail in the coffin. Indiana is when he realizes he's inside it." Following Alexander's report, co-host Savannah Guthrie wondered, "So it's no secret that there's not a lot of love lost between John Boehner and Ted Cruz, but in a certain way, do you think this helps Ted Cruz. I mean, he makes this argument that it's the establishment that doesn't like him. Chuck Todd, at least I believe it was, yes, it does look like it was Chuck Todd, then pipes in and says, yeah, this could have helped Ted Cruz 6 months ago. This could have helped Ted Cruz if there was no such thing as Donald Trump. Oh, the wondrous Donald Trump. You know, I saw another story. I believe it was at Twitchy or something that showed screenshot after screenshot after screenshot of the mainstream media, of network media, of cable media, talking about Donald Trump during their broadcast, and then literally on the cryon beneath their conversation while they're talking about Donald Trump, breaking news, Donald Trump is set to speak. They've given him so much free publicity and free advertising that that's really why he's winning the race. That's why he is leading the Republic for the Republican nomination. There are other reasons perhaps as well, but that is the main reason, because of the media pushing this guy. But anyway, there's even I'll try to put it on the Facebook page. There's even a screenshot of a dog where, and the caption underneath, cryon underneath, saying, dog reluctantly takes Donald Trump pledge at one of his rallies. But anyway, Chuck Todd saying, well, 6 months ago, this could have helped if there was no Donald Trump. He said, this really hurts Ted Cruz now. It's emblematic of why the Stop Trump movement couldn't get people to rally around Ted Cruz. And what you hear John Boehner say is essentially what you hear behind the scenes here in Washington with a lot of Republicans. As much as they fear Trump, they think the alternative in Cruz is worse. This is why Cruz is stuck where he's at right now. People, what he's basically saying here is that the establishment, they don't want Trump. They don't want Cruz. But for all you anti-establishment types out there that are, hey, I'm with you in being anti-establishment, but basically what he's telling you, which I believe is 100% true, is, look, they don't necessarily like, they don't necessarily want Donald Trump, but they sure as heck don't want Ted Cruz. They cannot stand Ted Cruz. And if this is supposed to be an insurgent, anti-establishment, stick it to the man, stick it to the government, stick it to the politicians, vote campaign, stick it to the system, then you're basically siding with the individual who the system has decided is the lesser of two evils. That's what you're doing. Fellow co-host Matt Lauer followed up, so what you're saying, Chuck, is the prospects for a Republican, a united Republican Party in this general election season are extremely dim. Todd predicted doom for the GOP. Well, of course he did. He's a liberal Democrat. It's very dim. If the choices are Trump and Cruz, it's not going to be a party that's going to be able to unite with itself, which actually he may have a point there. On CBS this morning, co-host Gayle King proclaimed more leading Republican are getting used to the idea of Donald Trump as their nominee, which, again, is part of this narrative. Donald Trump is inevitable. It's going to happen. You might as well accept it and just learn to live with it. Be happy about it. And I might say that more than likely Hillary and the Democrat media sure is. I don't know, folks, I don't know. I'm sure you heard this story. Personally, at this point, as much as I dislike Trump, I believe it's a false story. But I'm sure you heard this story that came out yesterday, I believe. Donald Trump, now a woman in California, 34, 35 years old now, apparently, allegedly, has sued Donald Trump for $100 million on allegations that he raped her over a period of 4 months when she was 13 years old at the time, at pedophile Bill Clinton buddy, pedophile Orgy Island fellow Jeffrey Epstein at Epstein's residence. I think based on what I read of the story, I think it's false. Trump's lawyer or one of his lawyers basically said that, the address that was listed on the lawsuit does not match, that this Katie Johnson person did not live at this address. The phone number listed on the lawsuit did not belong to her. So I do tend to think that it's probably false. Although it is worth noting that Donald Trump was in Jeffrey Epstein's little black book. And, you know, they talk about Ted Cruz supposedly being on the D.C. Madam list. Well, we know that Donald Trump was in Epstein's, little black book. So you tell me which is out of those two, not even hypotheticals. One's a hypothetical, one's pretty much accepted fact, as far as I know. Which one of those is worse? They're both terrible. But I think I'd rather be, if I had to choose the lesser of two evils, I'd actually choose neither evil. But I think I'd rather be on the D.C. Madam list than in the little black book of the guy at Pedophile Orgy Island and Jeffrey Epstein. But anyway, you got Gayle King. And the point, I don't mean to get off the point. The point in bringing that up is this is the kind of stuff that we're going to hear from the media over and over and over again. Some of it will be true. Some of it will be fiction, probably. But Donald Trump is going to get hit with it over and over and over again, constantly, if and when he becomes the nominee. But anyway, you got Gayle King saying more Republicans are getting used to the idea of Donald Trump as their nominee. And one big GOP name is bashing Trump's number one opponent. And then they get Chip Reed on CBS explaining John Boehner retired from Congress last year, but he waded back into politics with a withering critique of Ted Cruz. An immature, blustering, drunken, I'm sorry, I shouldn't go there, but he has that reputation. But an immature, blustering, nonsensical rallying cry, basically, hardly a withering critique. And Boehner added his name to the list of establishment Republicans who are slowly accepting the fact that Donald Trump just might be their nominee. Reed enthused, Trump pounced on his opponent after former House Speaker John Baker compared him to the devil during an event at Stanford University. He noted that Cruz tried to spin the comments as a badge of honor, but the headline on screen announced, standing with Trump, billionaire gains GOP support as Cruz struggles. And again, here we have the media, as I mentioned, trying to shape this narrative that Ted Cruz is basically wasting his time, wasting everybody's time. Donald Trump is inevitable. But again, who's standing with Donald Trump? The establishment. Who did Donald Trump side with in this whole thing? He sided with Boehner. He felt like Boehner, his texting buddy and his golfing partner, reaffirmed and validated his critique of Ted Cruz as Lion Ted, as the senator that nobody can get along with. And again, I just happened to check my studio. Nothing much going on in there. But anyway. He's partnering up. He's cozying up. He's and look, I understand that they're against one another in this race. But again, Trump is cozying up with what John Boehner said. And Boehner, the epitome of the GOP surrender caucus establishment, is standing with Donald Trump. In a news brief at the top of the 8 a.m. Eastern Time hour, co-host Nora O'Donnell reiterated, former House Speaker John Boehner plans to vote for Trump. He also says Ted Cruz is the devil. It's one more sign the Republican establishment is accepting the likely nominee. On ABC's Good Morning America, correspondent Cecilia Vega gloated that Cruz was in delegate desperation mode and dire need of an upset to stay in the race. By the way, I know that there was a poll that came out. It was just one poll, and it's kind of an outlier from the other polls, but a poll from the Mike Downs something or other, Mike Downs Institute in Indiana, did a poll of, it wasn't a large poll, it was of 400 people or 800 people, something like that. I think they polled two separate polls, 400 Republicans and 400 Democrats in a different poll. But in that poll, Ted Cruz was winning by double digits, by 16%. He had 45% and went Cruz 45, Trump 29, Kasich 13, and undecided 13 in the state of Indiana. Now, like I said, one poll, but you've got the guys at 538, that blog, liberals in terms of their politics, but also pretty accurate in terms of their polling analysis, that has Cruz at a 65% chance of winning the Indiana primary. And he's expected to be cleaning up with some of these unbound delegates, or who could become unbound delegates, on a second ballot in the state of Virginia today. But everyone is saying this is over, that Ted Cruz is done, he's dead, except the fact that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. But anyway, Vega again saying that in delegate desperation mode and dire need of an upset to stay in the race, and stated, but this morning, the fight on the GOP side, hotter than ever, former House Speaker John Boehner heard in this recording telling Stanford University students what he really thinks of Cruz. And then you got John Carl, also at ABC, saying, absolutely, and now you're seeing establishment Republicans starting to get used to the idea of Donald Trump as a nominee. Two reasons for that. One, he is winning. The other reason, they really don't like Ted Cruz. But, you know, it's very interesting. The media treated this thing like John Boehner absolutely disintegrated Ted Cruz, that John Boehner was the final nail in the coffin of Ted Cruz's, you know, Grandpa Munster, as people like to compare him to, campaign. John Boehner has gotten lit up, and I mean absolutely lit up, by decent people, by conservatives, for what he said and for what he did. Now, you've got some of the establishment types, which, again, Donald Trump siding with these people. I know, I understand that what Boehner did benefits Donald Trump, and so I guess he's going to side with that. But, again, it's Donald Trump's, I mean, he's texting buddies. He's golf partners with Mr. GOP establishment, John Boehner. And you've got some other establishment politicians, current and former, who agreed with Boehner, saying, oh, yeah, that Ted Cruz, he is miserable. You know, one person, I believe, Charlie Dent, said, he may not be miserable, but he is an SOB. But the conservatives, and might I add, the decent people, are absolutely lighting up John Boehner and have lit up John Boehner on this. They said, Raul Labrador, I don't have it here in front of me, I read it yesterday, Raul Labrador, good solid conservative representative out of the state of Idaho, who mentioned, or who was on CNN with Wolf Blitzer, and said that John Boehner was the worst Speaker of the House in history. Now, that almost sounds a little bit Trump-esque in terms of saying that somebody is either the best ever or the worst ever, but that was his analysis, was John Boehner was the worst Speaker of the House in history, said he was a terrible leader, said that he hated conservatives, said that he just wanted the easy life, to be left alone and have the easy life and enjoy his wine and his golf club. And that came from Raul Labrador, who worked with John, who actually did work with John Boehner, or at least sat in the House of Representatives with John Boehner. More than likely, Boehner didn't really make much of an effort to work with him either, since he is a conservative. But you've got Mike Lee of course, very good friends with Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, who went on to the Mark Levin show on Thursday night. And Mike Lee, by the way, is very mild-mannered. If you know Mike Lee, mild-mannered, soft-spoken. A lot of people think that Mike Lee would be an excellent presidential candidate, with the exception or with the caveat that he's just he's not dynamic enough. He's not, I guess, outgoing enough, energetic enough, charismatic enough. Of course, some people say the same things about Cruz, at least when it comes to charisma, however you measure that. But anyway, Mike Lee, very soft-spoken, went on Mark Levin's show, said, "I'm appalled that John Boehner would do this. I have bit my tongue. I've held my tongue for years on John Boehner because I respected him as a person," which that just goes to show how decent of a person Mike Lee is to even say that. "And I respected his office enough to not call him out personally. The fact that he has done this is appalling, and he should be ashamed of himself, and I demand that he apologize. More importantly, Mark," Lee added, "this is a wake-up call to the American people who are supporting Donald Trump, thinking that he's the guy who's going to rail against the establishment. He's not. He is the establishment. He's the golfing buddy, the texting buddy of John Boehner, the same guy who praises Hillary Clinton, who praises Bernie Sanders. So if you're out there thinking that Donald Trump can somehow be the guy who can take down the establishment, think again, because quite the opposite is true." And Levin remarked, he said, "I don't think I've ever heard you so angry." And Lee said, "I am livid. He doesn't know Ted Cruz from Adam. Ted Cruz has probably not spoken more than 4 or 5 words to John Boehner in his life." So again, here you have confirmation. Here you have backup, by the way, for Cruz. "And I'm confident that every one of those words was polite. And yet he goes out and calls him the devil. This is wrong. He insisted of Cruz. I've never seen him raise his voice in anger to a colleague." And then you've got Franklin Graham, Reverend Franklin Graham, who wrote on his Facebook or posted on Facebook yesterday, "Former Speaker of the House John Boehner, shame on you. You had no business calling Ted Cruz Lucifer in the flesh. This is an embarrassment, and it's an embarrassment to our nation." He went on to add that it was beneath the elected office that John Boehner once held. So, I mean, Boehner has gotten lit up. Even Sean Hannity, who, even though he won't admit it, clearly is leaning and favoring and pretty much promoting Donald Trump, but even Sean Hannity called out John Boehner for what he said and what he did, which, you know, I don't have a lot of use, a lot of I don't want to obviously say I'm anywhere near his level, but when I say professional respect, but I don't have a lot of respect for what he's doing within his profession these days. You know, he's still a decent guy. I mean, I might not like what he's doing. I might not like where he's standing, but he's still a decent guy. And decent people recognize that what John Boehner did was ludicrous, was ridiculous, was appalling. And, you know, little John Boehner just apparently, and I don't mean to go Donald Trump and start just throwing out insults, but nevertheless, little John Boehner apparently decided he wasn't getting enough attention now that he wasn't in Congress anymore. I don't know. But again, back up a little bit here, and I got a couple other articles or a couple other points here. But back up a little bit here, and again, you got Boehner, texting buddy, golfing partner of Donald Trump. You've got Trump basically piling on to what Boehner said. And, you know, when people want to venture a guess as to what type of president Donald Trump would be, what type of deals Donald Trump would make, look right there at John Boehner. Look at what John Boehner did as Speaker of the House. Look at the deals that John Boehner worked out as Speaker of the House. And I think that's what you can expect. I think that's exactly what you can expect from Donald Trump. Now, you've got National Review Andrew McCarthy, who writes, Trump would press the agenda that drove his voters from the GOP. McCarthy writes, I wonder when Trump backers will realize they've been had. The 2006 GOP campaign has been overwhelmed by Donald Trump's celebrity persona, by the can't-take-your-eyes-off-it appearances where he might say or do anything, and anything includes explosives, incitements, and assorted idiocies that would have been disqualifying in the bygone times of, oh, 5 or 10 minutes ago. But Trump is not the real story of the campaign. The real story is the Republican base's rejection of the Republican establishment, i.e. the party leaders, prominent polls, lobbyists, and donors who make up the GOP component of the Washington ruling class. And again, he points out that basically you've got two candidates. Kasich is running a vanity campaign that he doesn't even want to count Kasich in it at this point. But it's Cruz and it's Trump. And he points out that all the establishment guys, Bush, Graham, Christie, even Marco Rubio, have all fallen by the wayside. And he says the second thing missing from the insurgent versus insurgent storyline is we're one insurgent short. McCarthy writes, Donald Trump is the Washington establishment. The fact that he has not previously held public office does not make him a, quote, end quote, outsider. Hell, Reince Priebus, the head of the Republican National Committee, has never held public office. If the ruling class were just the office holders, it would be short-lived. The Donald Trumps who pay the freight are the Washington establishment's lifeblood, which is very true. You know, people are saying, we don't want politicians controlled by special interests. Well, Donald Trump is a special interest. And he writes, they are joined to the office holders at the hip, or haven't you noticed Governor Christie shadowing the Donald? When Trump leans Republican, he leans with the Republicans who play ball with Democrats. It is Democrats predominantly who have been lavished with Trump's material and moral support over the decades, including, as we recently found out, $25,000 to Terry McAuliffe, governor of Clinton surrogate, Clinton ally, governor of Virginia, who is working to try to take guns away from the good people of Virginia, and who recently, by executive order, by governor or executive fiat, decided that felons should be allowed to vote, violating the Virginia state constitution, no doubt. But anyway, pointing out that Donald has basically donated and supported Democrats, materially and morally. He says there's plenty of room at the Trump trough, though, for the kind of Republicans that primary voters thought they had deep-sixed. Take John Boehner, former House Speaker, GOP establishment pillar, and longtime golf pal. When last seen in his Capitol Hill swan song, Boehner was courting Democrats and slamming through a budget that forfeited all Republican leverage against Obama. But with Trump kicking off his California campaign this week, there was Boehner thrilling the campus left at Stanford University with snipes at Ted Cruz. And remember, Boehner spent the last decade working with Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid, yet it's Ted Cruz he can't abide. He goes on to say, as it happens, Cruz and Boehner barely know each other. They overlapped in Washington for a little over one congressional term in different chambers. They've exchanged a few words, none of them cross apparently, in the few times they've spoken, and they've never worked together, at least not directly. Cruz, however, is a principled conservative who fought Obamacare to the bitter end. Boehner brought about the bitter end by pushing to fund Obamacare while pretending to oppose it. That experience is enough for Boehner to spew his bile and count himself as never Cruz, though he'd gladly vote for Trump, with whom he bragged of being texting buddies. McCarthy goes on to write, want to know why Obamacare is fully funded, why the meager spending caps enacted in 2011 were busted, why the debt limit was suspended so Washington could zoom past its $18 trillion credit line, why Obama's lawless executive order granting de facto amnesty to illegal aliens is proceeding apace, why Obama is emptying Guantanamo Bay and planning to transfer detainees into the United States, why the EPA continues to implement Obama's climate change agenda despite a Supreme Court stay of its anti-coal regulation, why no official was impeached and no funding was slashed when the IRS was used as a political weapon against conservative groups, why the Justice Department has a $27 billion budget that pays for its paralyzing investigations of the nation's police departments, while the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, threatens new legal action against climate change deniers and anti-Muslim speech. McCarthy says, thank John Boehner. To fight Obama on these and other progressive priorities would have required exploiting Congress's constitutional authority, particularly the power of the purse. Boehner and other GOP leaders were given this power because voters believed their promises to fight. Empty promises. He writes, while Boehner was surrendering, Donald Trump was backing him to the hilt. A staggering $100,000 contribution to the Congressional Leadership Fund, Boehner's super PAC, formed largely to fend off conservative primary challenges against GOP establishment loyalists. He also donated, of course, $100,000 to the Clinton Foundation. That's even more than the $60,000 Trump gave to Kentuckians for strong leadership. The super PAC of Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, along with a $5,200 contribution to McConnell's reelection campaign. So he's donated to Democrats, he's donated to the Clintons, he's donated to the establishment every step of the way. And occasionally a few handouts to people such as Ted Cruz, who get a smaller amount. Now, again, I've got a little bit of time left, I presume. Again, I'm sorry, I don't even know if this is recording, like I said. If it is, the last thing I'll get to, five signs Donald Trump is the establishment from the last 24 hours alone. Ben Shapiro, DailyWire.com, and he points out John Boehner, again, backing Trump, hating Cruz. He points out Trump defends Mitch McConnell against Cruz. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has cut deals with President Obama on everything from funding for Obamacare to funding on executive amnesty. He's one of the least popular Republican figures in America among the base. Cruz called him a liar yesterday, or a couple days ago. Actually, it would have been, I don't see a date on this. It was 2 or 3 days ago. Trump ripped Cruz for doing that. Again, by the way, not the first time he did that. He called him a maniac before. Cruz said Trump called the top man who's, or Trump basically saying Cruz called the top man who's actually a good guy, Mitch McConnell, a liar. You don't do things like that. And again, as Shapiro points out, not the first time Trump has defended McConnell from Cruz. And as Shapiro also points out, Trump has called Cruz, Senator Rubio, and Jeb, everyone else who's ever opposed him, a liar. Now, you've got Bob Corker, who a lot of these Trump voters absolutely hate and, you know, say that Cruz buddied up to. You've got Bob Corker praising Donald Trump after Trump gave a wildly incoherent but relatively subdued, for him, speech about foreign policy yesterday. Plaudits began arriving from establishment figures, including Senator Corker, who called it a very good foreign policy speech. Corker, of course, is a delightful fellow who came up with a plan to enshrine President Obama's Iran deal as law without a Senate treaty vote, which, by the way, I think is all that Ted Cruz was trying to do. I don't believe Ted Cruz is perfect in the least, but I think all Ted Cruz was trying to do was ensure, or at least try to, that the Senate would have a say on this before Barack Obama just went ahead and enacted it on his own. Now, you've also got John Cornyn, establishment rhino, backing Trump. Cornyn saying, I think he could change the electoral maps in ways we haven't seen before. This disrupts the usual Republican versus Democrat, conservative versus liberal paradigm. And I think we don't know how this will all play out. I think it will be okay. You don't need to despair. And then you've got CBS. Will Ron on Trump's candidacy, saying Trump also has one main advantage, which is that he'd probably be the most moderate nominee in decades. Now, Trump is not normally what we think of when we think of moderates. Reactionary moderate is perhaps the best term to describe him. But border walls and Muslim bans aside, Trump really most closely resembles an old-school northeastern centrist Republican. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but you people who think that you're voting for something different, you people who think that you're voting for change once again, are voting for a more politically incorrect, more vulgar Mitt Romney. You know, a more energetic Bob Dole. Trump likes the welfare state. He's made protecting entitlement central to his pitch. It's safe to say that he's likely at heart socially liberal. I'd say that's more than safe to say. The story of how he became anti-abortion, for example, doesn't make a great deal of sense. And Shapiro says, Trump's politics are establishment. The establishment has been perturbed by his incapacity to control his id, but that's about all they dislike about the man. They agree with him on policy, they know they can work with him, and they believe that he'll enrich them and empower them so long as they properly worship at his altar. And that is what it's all about. Look, the establishment perhaps does not like or does not particularly want Donald Trump,